just did an entire intro for this show with no SD card, meaning basically there was nothing happening. So now we got to do it again. I apologize for my own inconvenience.
You're not going to say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone dogs and are they in harmony? You're a helpful snowman.
All right, hey everybody. Welcome. Welcome to another. So as we talked about last time, the new goal of this show is to basically, make this show popular. So, I mean, that should work out pretty well, right? And, interestingly enough, after we did our last show, I found that there was an article on the New York Times, that was talking about podcasts. And the title of it was, Have We Hit Peak Podcast? And it had a picture of a dopey-looking lady all made up and sitting at a microphone that's clearly not at the correct height for her. And, you know, in front of a MacBook and, like, there's some wires and shit. She's got giant headphones on and she's giving this look like, her name is Morgan Mandriotta. And so the caption at the top of the picture says, Morgan Mandriotta's show, The Advice Podcast, was short-lived. And she says, we assumed we'd be huge, have affiliate marketing deals and advertisements, she said. So here we go. Have We Hit Peak Podcast. I felt like this was very relevant to what we were talking about. So we're just going to go through this, talk about it, see if there are relevant lessons to learn, because maybe we've hit peak podcast, as the New York Times would say. Because the New York Times is definitely something I respect in terms of, boy, have we hit peak something and now it's going away. Maybe as a newspaper, they have experienced peak of something and then seen it fade into obscurity. And so maybe they are the right people. Maybe they're warning me of the upcoming, you know, what they're like. We lived through it once, and so now we know. Here we go. By Jennifer Miller. This was July 18th, 2019. I don't know when our last episode came out. It was like practically the same time, probably. I'm just going to start my extremely slow computer here. And I'm sure everyone wants to wait for my computer so I can look at the date of my last show and be like, did I scoop the New York Times? Have I scooped the New York Times in some way? I know that really matters to you as a listener. I know that's your number one concern. What did Pete do to the New York Times? Did he figure it out before Jennifer Miller on July 18th? Here we go. In my iTunes machine, going to Helpful Snowman Radio. Oh, July 16th. So 2 days ahead. 2 days before the New York Times declared that podcasting is dead, Pete was like, it's time to revive podcasting. All right. In 2016, Morgan Mandriotta and Lester Lee, two freelance writers looking to grow their personal brands. Already, I'm like, okay. Whenever, you know, you write a book, you do a podcast, you do something in order to promote your brand, I'm not going to be surprised when it fails. You should be doing a thing and then do other things to promote that thing. But I don't think you should do something to promote your personal brand, because what is that? They decided to start a podcast. They called it The Advice Podcast and put about as much energy into the show's production as they did the name. After all, no one was paying them for this yet. See, again, that's like, should people get paid for doing stuff? Sure. But I mean, if you start doing it because you're like, we're going to get rich off of it, it's probably not going to work. Unless, okay, here's what you can make with the plans to get rich. An electric car. You can learn to be a carpenter and build something out of wood that's useful and hope to get rich. You can build a marijuana farm. You can build anything that's basically useful and that anyone else can't, you know, if you got a room of 100 people, maybe 3 or 4 of them could do what you can do. That is a useful thing to build for money. If you want to get money, going into the arts is a terrible, terrible way to do it. Each week, the friends, neither of whom had professional experience dispensing advice, met in a free room at the local library and recorded themselves chatting with an iPhone 5. "We assumed we'd be huge, have affiliate marketing deals and advertisements," Miss Mandriotta said. But 6 episodes in, when neither Casper Mattresses nor MeUndies had come knocking, the friends quit. Today, Miss Mandriotta says the same DIY spirit that made having a podcast alluring is precisely what doomed the project. "You can talk about the trees outside as much as you want, but if you're not going to serve listeners and do it in a way that's engaging, your chances of going viral are low," she said, calling her show the most makeshift podcast with mediocre advice. But see, again, I'm going to ask a question here. Is the failure of the podcast the content? Or is it the fact that before they even started, let's look at this sentence, and I'm going to pick out the bullshit business words. "If you're not going to serve listeners, okay. I mean, that could be something relevant. If you're thinking about the listeners, but I think her thing is, if you don't serve listeners, parentheses, in service of them giving you money. And do it in a way that's engaging. Engaging is like such a marketing word. If you're not engaging, they need to engage with you. Engagement, engage, ah! It's like marketers and single ladies in their late 30s. No one talks about engagement more than those two groups. And your chances of going viral are low. Going viral, that's another bullshit marketing thing, that it's like people who don't actually have something to offer. This is, I think, why going viral is a thing, because a lot of people don't actually have something of value to offer. And so their best chance is to go viral, which basically is shorthand for we got famous and we don't know why, and we're famous for no real reason. And that's like their best shot at it. And I find the idea of it very frustrating, because it's like, yeah, you don't try to go viral. And also, anytime something's viral, it seems like, most times if something's viral, monetizing it, by the time it's monetized or someone tries to monetize it, it's over and it's ruined and it's not interesting anymore. It's not fun. Everyone's had their shot at it and we're like, we've moved on to the next thing. Also, they did 6 episodes. That is not nearly enough. I would love to go back to the 6th episode of this because I'm sure it's horrible. Or it's our best. We may have peaked at 6 and then gone on to do, 400 more. Maybe our mistake. It's no wonder the phrase "everyone has a podcast" has become a Twitter punchline. Like the blogs of yore, podcasts, with their combination of sleek high-tech and cozy retro low, what? Are today's de rigueur medium, seemingly adopted by every entrepreneur, freelancer, self-proclaimed marketing guru, and even corporation. Who doesn't want branded content by Home Depot and Goldman Sachs piped into their ears on the morning commute? Is that a real thing? A Home Depot podcast? I need to investigate this. Home Depot podcast. Give me an H. Holy shit. That is real. Okay. That's fucked up. But here's another thing I want to say about it. I think podcasts that exist, any art, again, and I'll call this an art. Please excuse me for calling this an art for this little bit. Anytime you do an art in order to promote another thing, So in other words, you're not doing it to make the podcast good. You're not making a podcast because you're like, a podcast is the right medium for me, and a podcast is what I want to do. Then of course it's going to be fucking terrible. Jesus Christ. There are now upward of 700,000 podcasts, according to the podcast production and hosting service Blueberry, with between 2,000 and 3,000 new shows launching each month. In August, William Morrow will publish a book by Kristen Meinzer, a co-host of the popular By the Book podcast. Its title, So You Want to Start a Podcast. So that'll sell really nicely to idiots who can't look up a fucking article. There are dozens of books like Miss Meinzer's with names like Podcasting Hacks and Podcasting for Profit. There is also a compendium published by Podcast Junkies titled The Incredibly Exhausted List of Podcasts About Podcasting. And yet the frequency with which podcasts start and then end, or pod fade, as it's coming to be known in the trade, has produced a degree of cultural exhaustion. Do we need to come up with a, do we need to call it a pod fade? Do we need to call it, like, is that like saying I fade? Lowercase I fade is the term, the Apple-branded term for, like, stopping doing something. We're not necessarily sick of listening to interesting programs, but we're definitely tired of hearing from every friend, relative, and coworker who thinks they're just an iPhone recording away from creating the next serial. Anyone can start one, and so anyone who thinks they can start one will do it, said Nicholas Kwa, who runs an industry newsletter called Hot Pod. It's like the business of me. Being a podcast host plays into people's self-importance, said Karen North, a clinical professor of communication at the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California. And it projects that importance to others. Public speaking and consulting gigs now often go to the person who's the expert and has the podcast, she said. The thing about podcasts, Dr. North added, is that it's very, very hard to determine popularity. It's easy for the host to appear to be an influencer, and whether anybody finds that podcast or listens to it and the bounce rate, who knows? That's so dumb. This is so dumb. Because basically what this is saying, too, is it's definitely equating the popularity of a show with its value, which is crazy. I mean, yes, it's monetary value. The frequency with which podcasts launch and then pod fade has led to a degree of cultural... Okay, that's a caption on a picture. People use all kinds of metrics to tout the popularity of their shows, sort of like how I'm trying to cheat and basically create a week of like 100 episodes and therefore make it seem like I had 10,000 downloads in a week. Whether it's the number of iTunes reviews they get or the total downloads they receive per month. These metrics mean different things and don't necessarily connote success, and as recent social media scandals have shown, popularity can be purchased. No fucking shit. Here's my advice, by the way, if you're an advertiser, don't listen to this in terms of this show, because I wouldn't make it based on my own advice. But maybe listen to a show and see if it's a value. How about that? How about instead of they send you a pie graph and you like look through that and be like, well, they did manage to take a number and turn it into a graph shape. Seems legit. That's good enough for me. How about instead of doing that, you just listen to the fucking show and then you can kind of tell. Because for one thing, you could immediately tell like, does this show seem to have a following? Like, do they seem to have some inside jokes and things that they're doing that would denote like, oh, okay, people are interested in this. Here's another good one. Like, a successful show probably has a Patreon and is probably doing well. That's probably your best measure of success. Because if someone's willing to pay to listen to a show, then that is likely to convert to a sale for you. Call him cynical, but Jordan Harbinger, host of The Jordan Harbinger Show podcast, quotes, The Jordan Harbinger Show podcast, why wouldn't you just call it The Jordan Harbinger Show, thinks there is a podcast industrial complex. Hosts aren't starting shows because it's a fun niche hobby, he said. They do it to make money or because it will make them an influencer. Is that true? I guess that could be true. I mean, I do have my complaints about, like, for example, it seems like every celebrity and their mom starts a podcast. I'm sure there is literally a podcast out there with a celebrity and their mom. And it's like, it's a little unfair because you're sort of like, well, are you a celebrity who's known for talking to people and what? And you know what? The celebrity podcasts are all this. I'm going to bring my celebrity friends on and talk to them. You're like, oh, cool. Can't wait. Mr. Harbinger understands the irony of his position. His own podcast, in which he interviews business experts, recently Reid Hoffman, the co-founder of LinkedIn, and Eric Schmidt, the former executive chairman of Alphabet. I don't even know what Alphabet is. Should I know what that is? And gives it, and by the way, the fucking co-founder of LinkedIn. I would have like two questions for the co-founder of LinkedIn. I'd be like, can you honestly tell me one person who's gotten a job straight up from LinkedIn? And two, did you just want like Facebook but for work? Because that's what this seems like. It's very annoying. You've created something not as evil as Facebook, but possibly more annoying. And gives advice on how to be successful, gets about 250,000 downloads per episode, and brings in multiple seven figures in advertising revenue annually, he said. Having become an aural influencer, he now receives... Oh, my God. The term influencer, by the way, I hate. I hate that, because it's like, okay, well, an influencer can be somebody who doesn't know anything. It's like, do you have the power to influence people? Well, so does anyone does in theory. And usually it's like a good-looking person who does something on a, you know, semi-professional level. But it can be... Influencer is like the thing we invented because then we can don't have to have this discussion of like... So is taking a lot of pictures of your butt like a skill or not really? Because obviously it's not. But this way, we don't have to have that discussion over and over. We can just sort of be like, hey, you know, it's they're an influencer. And then that can just be like, so they put things over the top of their boobs and then take pictures of their boobs. And that's a career. That's awesome. Having become an aural influencer, he now receives daily requests to appear on other people's shows. But when he informs these hosts that he won't publicize the interview on his own show or social feeds, the requests often evaporate. I'm so out on becoming a part of your marketing plan, he said. See, like, what the fuck? It's like, this is like the writer who's like, well, I'm not going to teach other writers how to write. I don't want to teach. I don't want other writers to benefit. I just want it for me. No community. No sense of community. For the last few years, Mr. Harbinger has given a talk titled, For the Love of God, Please Don't Start Another Podcast. It's sort of tongue-in-cheek, obviously, he said. I love podcasting, and the more shows in the mix, the better, as long as they're done by someone who actually cares and isn't just trying to get a piece of pie. What needs to be created, he said, is a real conversation that will benefit the audience, not the host. Well, I don't totally disagree with him, I guess. I feel like we're saying the same thing. I have a hard time. The cynical side of me is like, But does anyone really care about interviewing the co-founder of LinkedIn? There's no available data comparing podcast formats, such as how many interview shows exist and how many are news programs or narrative journalism. I like how they're like, interview shows, news, and narrative journalism. The most common, how about fucking comedy podcast, idiot? But industry analysts and production companies say that so-called banter casts, in which the hosts and guests chit-chat for an hour or more, likely comprise the bulk of new productions. Well, duh. Okay, here's another thing. I think part of the rise of podcasts is probably because of the death of radio. So radio died. Like, in the early 90s, mid-90s even... when I would get ready for school in the morning or something, you'd turn on the radio, and it would just be goofy people talking about shit on the radio. And then at some point, they were just like, oh, fuck that. Let's not do, like, personalities on the radio. Let's just have music. Which is, like, okay. I mean, sometimes music's good, and sometimes it's shit. And sometimes you just want to, like, hear somebody talking. You just want to have a voice. It's nice, too, especially if you're not, you know, if you don't wake up with somebody and get ready with somebody or whatever, and you're just like, this is like my friend. that I talk to during the day, and I don't have to talk, but they're always game. And so it's like obvious to me that that's why the banter cast, quote unquote, is a thing. I feel like, too, there's this sort of podcasting idea that the banter cast is not good or is like inferior to the scripted show. But I think they're just different styles. And some people want one and some people want the other. And like, I like the banter cast, which is good because that's what I fucking do, obviously. But I feel that it's sort of like shit on because it's just like, oh, you didn't do a bunch of fucking work in the studio to put together this highly produced thing. It's like, no, I didn't. Maybe because I'm great without editing for hours and hours. So many of these are just painful, said Tom Webster, the senior vice president of Edison Research, which tracks consumer media behavior. We revere the great interviewers, but it's an incredible skill that nobody has. What did Terry Gross do before she had her own show? Well, she was an interviewer, not a marketer for a software company. Yeah, see, again, it's like, of course Terry Gross is good at it. That's what she does. And it's like, talking about stupid shit is what I've done my whole life. I'm not talking about stupid shit in order to convince you to come see my indie film. Steve Pratt, a veteran CBC producer who now runs a podcasting company called Pacific Content, actively discourages his clients from starting interview shows. People assume that's all a podcast is, two people talking unedited for 2 hours, 3 hours, he said. But just because Joe Rogan can do it well, Mr. Pratt said, doesn't mean the average Joe can. He likes to remind clients that the average American commute is under half an hour, about 27 minutes, according to census data. So you've got to respect people's time. You could be better than 90% of interview podcasts by cutting out the boring stuff, he said. The key is to put yourself in the listener's shoes over and over again. I like how all these consumer marketing things are like giving advice on something and then also saying, we don't really have any data on any of this. We don't actually know what works, but here's what probably works. I mean, is that crazy or is that just me? And they're like, well, here's the average commute. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, my commute is about 10 minutes. I listen to podcasts on my commute all the time. I don't need to complete them during my commute. And it's like, okay, well, the average commute is 27 minutes. But, you know, you could listen to one over two commutes. Or perhaps I'm listening to it as I drive from the gym and then when I'm working out. In which case, it's like, I mean, a combined 2 hours isn't too long. But really, I think the thing is with this length, everyone talks about the perfect length. And I guess we'll go into it more. But for right now, I kind of feel like here's the perfect length. If people like your show and the show is going well, then it's the right length. It doesn't really matter how long or short it is if people are enjoying it. If they're like looking at the clock being like, when's this shit going to be over? Or like sometimes you can feel when the energy dips and it's time to go. Sometimes we overstay our welcome. But for the most part, it's like, well, yeah, if you like it, if you like a movie, it's not too long if it's 3 hours. But if you don't like the movie, you're like, well, part of the problem was it was 3 hours of something I didn't like. In 2017, David Berkus, a tech and business writer and former podcaster, stopped producing his podcast when it became clear he wasn't attracting new listeners. I wouldn't go back to podcasts in any form, certainly not in interview form, he said. But then he sort of did. When his last book was published, he went on over 100 podcasts to promote it. Just as he was using these shows to push his book, it's likely that hosts were using him to build their cred. He estimates that only a small fraction actually read his book in advance. The others think they can wing it, and it ends up being kind of awkward, he said. Now, I would love to do this. If you know someone who wants to interview an indie author on their podcast, and I do not care if they've read the book or not, that would be amazing. I think a train wreck where the person obviously hasn't read the book is so much more fun. Because it's like they assume they can just wing it. And it's like, do you really think fucking like when they have someone on Jimmy Fallon and it's like, you have a new book out and it's this. Do you honestly think he's read that? Or is it like, well, some intern listened to the audiobook on double speed and then he's like, all right, give me the beats. Give me a couple questions that make it seem like I've read the book. I don't know why I asked that as a question. Like, do you think that's how it... Obviously, that's how it goes. Meanwhile, Miss Mandriota is giving podcasting another go. Her new attempt is an interview-style show about sex and relationships called Hard and Deep, and she's committed to a longer run than the advice podcasts. If she succeeds, she'll be in the minority. Between March and May of this year, only 19.3% of existing podcasts introduce a new episode, according to Blueberry. I'm going to have a set strategy, do the research, and make sure I know what I'm doing instead of just seeing what sticks, Miss Mandriota said. It definitely won't be taped at a library where janitors are walking around yelling in the background of each episode. Oh, so you're going to do a sad strategy and set the research. Again, sounds compelling. It's like, oh, we thoroughly researched the market for this show and then made the show based on the research. Amazing. I can't wait. No, listen, fucker. Make something that you like, because if you... This is good book writing advice. And I think it applies double to podcast, which is like, if you're not enjoying it, if you're not having any fun doing it, the person listening to it's not going to enjoy it either. It's not reasonable for you to expect someone to enjoy something, to enjoy consuming something that you didn't enjoy making. I mean, think about this. If you are a hate-filled chef and you're just making crap food because you don't give a fuck, and you're just doing it because it's like, well, what's the minimum effort I can put in so that someone will exchange money for this? Then yeah, it's probably not going to be very good. I'm not going to be shocked, and I'm not going to read a fucking New York Times article about, can you believe this chef who didn't really give a shit and started a restaurant for the money didn't succeed? Yeah, I can. I like, too, how it's like, well, she went from an advice podcast, which, having done it, trust me, I mean, this is like, that's one of the most saturated things, because it's easy. Anyone can give advice. And then B, to move on to a sex podcast, I feel like that's like the secondary, we don't have any fucking idea what to do for this show, so let's do a sex show. Because it's basically like, well, we've had sex, so whatever. I would much rather listen to a sex advice show from a complete virgin, because then I'd be like, well, at least this is interesting. At least this is super hypocritical and weird. And just like, what are their concepts of sex? It would be fun too, because you'd be like, I wonder how close they got stuff. You know, if they're like, what does a boob feel like? And the person's like, well, I've never touched one, but here's what I imagine. What is a hard penis versus a flaccid penis? What's the difference in how they feel to the hand? And it's like, I don't know, but I'll take my best guess. One's like a wooden dowel and one is like a dead nightcrawler. And I'd be like, not bad. Not as far off as they could be. Could have been less gross about it, but it's really not that bad. So anyway, yeah, I'm just like, okay, that's great. That's really great. I'm glad that you've started one garbage podcast and now you're doing another garbage podcast. Really, really wonderful. So there you go. That's the story from the New York Times. So that's the story that sort of attempts to prove that podcasting is done. So I guess bad news, everyone listening to this, podcasting is done. You have wasted your time, idiots. Hope you're happy with yourselves. I hope you're fucking happy with what you've done for yourselves and to yourselves. You fools. What were you thinking listening to this? Don't you read the New York Times? New York Times? Don't you know that this is a dead medium? The only medium deader than this is books. Buy my books on Amazon, by the way. Whatever mediums are most dead, that's where you're going to find Pete doing whatever the fuck he wants to. I think what's great, though, here's the other thing. When I was talking about radio and stuff, one of the things that I was always lacking in radio is it was like, there were so many rules and so many advertiser things and all this shit, right? And when podcasting came about, it was kind of like, you can do whatever you want. Like, you can swear. You can say terrible things. You can decide to treat your advertisers like shit. You can talk to your listeners however you fucking want. If you want to talk about this one day and talk about that the other day, you can. And I think that to me, this is the beauty of both books and maybe now podcasting, and especially comics as well, which is like, in mediums that people don't really care about, that don't have a ton of notice in the pop culture space. So like podcasting is a big thing and a lot of people listen to them, but it's not like having a podcast makes you a big player. And books are kind of similar. I mean, I think people care about books less now than they ever have. But I think what's also bad about that is an opportunity, which is to say, if no one cares about books, that means that someone like me can go into the world of books and do whatever the fuck I want. And no one's really going to care. There's no one there sitting over my shoulder being like, okay, now it's time to monetize and make this great. You can do whatever you want in it. And it becomes a very free space to create things. And I think when in those spaces, that's where things get interesting. There's a reason that like most big budget movies aren't very interesting. And it's because there's like 1,000 masters to please, right? They all want a different thing. They all need a different thing. And therefore, you have weird, stupid shit, and you kind of end up with something mediocre. Because, you know, if you have to make a beer that pleases 1,000 random people, it's probably going to just be a middle-of-the-road, uninteresting thing, right? If you have to make a pizza, if you have to get a pizza for your office, it's like, well, everyone knows the best pizza is pepperoni, but the safest pizza to get for the office is definitely a cheese pizza. And it's like, well, then no one's really happy, but everyone's reasonably satisfied. So that's what's great about this. And in a way, I kind of hope they're right. I hope it's dead, and that means we can stop worrying about pleasing people and start getting real. How'd you like them apples? All right, guys. That's all for me. I had to say that as I subtly leaned over to put this and then start turning it up. The knob is very far away. Can you hear how far away I am? It's horrible. I have to yell to reach the knob and fade in. All right. We'll see you next time.